Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. You know, nothing says Thanksgiving better than a copyright forum. And joining us to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art today are Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and David Newhoff. If you have a question about copyright law, fair use, AI, what's in the public domain, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Take a break from prepping the turkey and talk about intellectual property, won't you? 800-348-2551. We have Polly, Bill, and David, and they're ready for you right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Copyright Forum today. We have assembled a great panel to answer your questions. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators. Yeah, portraits a specialty. He painted my liver once for Christmas. And a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown and Nantucket, Mass. David Newhoff is a writer, communications professional, rights advocate, and entrepreneur. He has written over 1,000 articles on intellectual property and cyber policy issues, and his writing has been cited by professional creators, academics, and testimony before Congress, and in one brief, to the Supreme Court already. Bill, David, and Polly, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Nice to have you all here. Give us a call now if you have a question about intellectual property, copyright, fair use, the whole nine yards. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Well, let's meet the new guy here, David Newhoff. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
He's on mic three, Zach. Oh, yeah, let's try that.
Well, thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it.
There you are.
Now that my mic is on, it's helpful.
Well, that's great to have you here, and an impressive CV, if you will. And so we have many items to discuss. Great to have you on board. I pulled an article. To me, I don't know what to make of this. This is from the AP last week. Country singers, romance novelists, video game artists, and voice actors are appealing to the U.S. government for relief as soon as possible from the threat that artificial intelligence poses to their livelihoods. Now, the U.S. Copyright Office is taking comments, I guess, on this right now. Shira Perlmutter, I think, is the boss. And says, as humans feed content into AI systems and give instructions to influence what comes out, is there a point at which there's enough human involvement in controlling the expressive elements of the output that the human can be considered to have contributed authorship? There's a lot of fair use issues here, right, David?
Maybe.
Ah.
So maybe. There are a lot of issues with AI. And so first of all, when artists and I join them in their concern, when artists are asking, quote, the government to regulate and address these problems, they're really not talking about the Copyright Office. They're talking about Congress. And as we know, nothing in Congress is going to happen quickly. You know, 5 years would be fast for new legislation. And so right now there are a number of class action lawsuits afoot that'll maybe decide some of these key issues. One of the big issues is, of course, the ingestion process of feeding these systems with copyrighted works, train them. And the AI developers are, of course, assuming that that's fair use. And I disagree, and so do many other colleagues.
Let's just explain what the ingestion process means. The ingestion process means that these companies, these AI companies, are going out there and scraping or using existing artwork
that may be registered
to train their AI programs. Which means that not only are they going to be potentially cutting those illustrators, photographers, and other visual creators in particular out of future royalties or future work, but basically they are training their programs on the backs of these other creators.
It also has trade dress implications, too.
Explain.
Well, trade dress is where an artist has a or a product has a signature style. And AI is very good at picking up on those stylistic elements and transferring them to a piece that the original creator didn't create.
Right. But making Joe Smith's AI-created work look like his original work.
But
right.
So can style be copyrighted?
No,
it cannot. And that's one of the challenges, right? Yeah. So one of the big concerns, and this has been brought up in testimony before Congress, and it's being brought up in comments to the Copyright Office, is this question of style. So, you know, I pick a famous artist and say I'd like work made in his style or her style, but copyright does not protect that. Just as a matter of law, and the closest laws that we have that do protect that kind of thing are rights of publicity laws, mm-hmm. but they don't really actually protect that either. They protect likeness, and even those laws are state laws, and there are only 25 states that have statutory right of publicity laws. So technically, there is nothing on the books to protect against copying somebody's style.
Which is
a new area.
Which is why we need congressional intervention.
And yes. What would you suggest that, Bill Westwood, what would you suggest that Congress do first step?
They have to learn how to use email.
Well, first they need to learn about copyright and understand the potential effect on millions of creators' livelihoods. And I wish I could tell you exactly what, but this whole thing has really arisen into everyone's view in the past year.
But I bet that nothing's going to happen until Disney is impacted.
That may be true.
The 800-pound gorilla. Bill Westwood is here, Polly Law and David Newhoff. It is the Copyright Forum on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. I've heard this argument made about AI and the way they ingest whatever the technology is, ingests all of this data and information and spits out things that are like other things. So, and I've heard this argument roundly criticized. But when you're an artist, say I'm a painter, I study painting. I study all these greats, whether it's the great Bob Ross or the painter of light, whatever his name was. The point is, those elements are going to come out in what I do naturally. How is it different if AI pulls everything in all the time?
Because very often, well, currently the prompts are do a portrait in the style of Andy Warhol. And AI will spit out something that you'd look at it at first glance and say, that's Andy Warhol.
But he stole everything.
He may not be the best example then.
And not only that, but look, we all started out looking at other people's work and emulating.
Yeah.
But you develop your own style.
Yeah.
You develop a unique style. Otherwise, you're not marketable. And once you become marketable and your style becomes unique and your techniques become unique, okay, these are things that shouldn't be arbitrarily taken from you. And not only that, but remember, we do have copyright in here, and you can't just go and copy one of my works off of the internet. So why should AI be able to go and use one of my works in order to train their programs, or use a bunch of my works, or use a bunch of my works and Polly's works and a bunch of other illustrators' works?
Well, the argument you're referring to, Ray, has been used in a couple of different contexts. And, of course, everything you just said implies different stages of the process. For example, there's the question of this training, right? We're bringing in billions and billions of works into a machine, training it how to work, how to create art, for example.
Yeah.
And so the developers are making, simultaneously, they're trying to make a legal argument and a cultural one. They're saying that our machines learn just like humans learn how to make art. Well, first of all, on a cultural level, no, that's not true.
Okay.
Humans do a hell of a lot more than just you know, look at something and learn technically how it works. That's number one. Number two, why are you making this argument? They're trying to basically make a fair use argument in the blogosphere, which is not really where to make it. And then, of course, they're trying to make a case for the outputs of these systems and saying, well, it's just another evolution in the development of art. And that gets into a broader cultural as well as a legal question. Is there a purpose in having machines make art at all? Why should we?
That's another question, though.
It is, but it's inherent to this kind of you know, kind of moral comparison, I think, between the machine and the human.
Polly, since we have a couple of artists here, I know what the answer is going to be. Go ahead. Okay.
Well, the thing that strikes me about the argument about, oh, you know, the machine is just learning, blah, 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 is that the machine is learning, but it is also learning the names of the artists it is taking information from. So if you say, create an image based on Picasso's Blue Period. Well, it's emulating a specific, you're not asking it make a cubist painting, a pre-cubist painting in shades of blue. So.
Okay. Well, here's what, this is from Meta, I believe. This is a quote. The American AI industry is built in part on the understanding that the Copyright Act does not proscribe the use of copyrighted material to train AI models, generative AI, says a letter from Meta Platforms, which is, of course, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp. The purpose of AI training is to identify patterns across a broad body of content, not to extract or reproduce individual works, it added. We have 30 seconds before break. Bill, you go first.
That's all I can say.
David.
What they're really alluding to most likely is a case called Google Books, the Authors Guild, where Google Books prevailed on fair use. But
that was Sarah Silverman, or was that?
This is way before that.
Okay.
This is the idea is that here they're making a case that that the AIs themselves are transformative in a broader sense than a creative transformative. Mm. That they're this new machine that can be used for amazing new things, right? and because of that, that enough will be. Sorry, I don't mean to yammer, but that'll carry the day.
We get a lot of that.
Sorry,
keep going.
That'll carry the day for them is really the Google Books case. A lot of people think that that's stretching it too far. In fact, Google Books, the court itself said that this was pushing fair use about as far as they were willing to push it, or certainly as far as they had pushed it to date. But that's what they're really referring to is that their understanding of the copyright law, making a case for their use being fair use, is really based mostly on that.
All right, before we take a break, Polly, you want to add anything?
I did, but I forgot what I was
going
to say.
Okay, maybe you'll remember during the break.
I blame myself.
800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and David Newhoff, your calls on the way.
Support for WMC comes from Sullivan Catskills, a place to discover local makers, artists, and artisans. SullivanCatskills.com for details. Arts Spark, Saratoga Springs, New York. Digital marketing and web design for all creatives, taking artists and arts businesses online. ArtsSpark.com. Half Moon Books, an independent used bookstore located in the heart of Kingston. Store hours from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. daily. HalfMoonUsedBooks.com for more information.
Oh, yeah. Give me the simple life. Count Basie and the orchestra here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Copyright Forum today. Polly Law, David Newhoff, and Bill Westwood here to answer your calls. Let's grab a couple of calls here, and then we'll go to the email bag at voxpop@wamc.org. Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet, happy Thanksgiving. Welcome.
Thank you, Ray. Same to you.
Hi, Hattie.
Hi, Polly.
Oh, you know each other. Ah, a plant. Okay,
yes,
go ahead.
We do.
Your
yes,
check's
we do.
In the mail.
The question I have is, I recently illustrated a small book, and everything's fine, and it's going to be published, as far as I know, and everything is good, except the question I'm asking is, who owns the copyright to the illustrations?
Do you have a written agreement?
Not yet.
Okay, well, until you sign over your rights, please don't sign over your rights, but until you do, you retain them.
That's correct. From the moment you created that artwork, those illustrations, you own the copyright. Now, however, it is extremely important that you get that clearly spelled out in writing as part of the publishing contract.
Ah.
And if you want to, you should have someone review the contract for you.
Yeah. Any one of us could probably, if you wanted to contact us offline, could recommend a good copyright attorney for you to discuss it with.
There you go.
Well, actually, thank you. I did a deal with Paul Rapp some years ago over another situation of copyright, and so that would be probably a good person to talk to.
Yeah, unless you owe him money still from the last time.
Hey,
Goodness,
I don't owe anybody any money at this moment.
Well, thank you for calling, Harriet. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. We mentioned Paul Rapp. He is on a flight coming back from Europe, I
think,
at the moment.
Poor thing, from Paris.
Oh, must be tough, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the billable hours, they do add up. Let's go to Michelle in New York City. Michelle.
Hi. Thank you so much for the program. I am enjoying it tremendously, and it pains me to hear David Newhoff trying to make sense out of the sociopathy that is going on in AI, in generative AI.
And hi, Michelle.
So it's Friends Week here.
It's Friends Week here on the show.
Oh, boy.
So this is a question that has come up in relation to some of those AI questions, but because David wrote a brilliant book called Who Invented Oscar Wilde, and I recently heard, but
no,
I don't understand
the check in the mail.
Okay, so go ahead.
I don't understand the implications of the Oscar Wilde case at the heart of the Cerrone decision, because Cerrone and Wilde already had a contract. And so my question is, could David please illuminate further why the Cerrone decision did not resolve issues of authorship, whereas you just told the previous caller that the moment you create a work, you have that authorship registered or not. And yet my concern is that AI is hacking or decoding authorship questions in just this way. I hope my question is coherent, but David is used to my kind of, rambling rabbit hole. So let him take it from
all
here.
All right, fair enough. Thanks, Michelle. Go
Thanks,
ahead,
Michelle.
David.
So, we could talk about this for a very long time. But, I mean, suffice to say, the Cerrone case to which Michelle's referring is the Burrough-Giles v. Cerrone case, which the Supreme Court decided in 1884, and that affirmed all photography as a copyrightable medium under U.S. law, and up till then it had been passed in 1865, added to the Copyright Act, and then it was challenged as a constitutional question in that case. It didn't really address necessarily the foundation of authorship, but what it did do as it relates to AI, and people have brought it up, including the Copyright Office, is that for the first time, there we have a machine-made type of work that does entail human authorship, and it was found that human authorship rests with the photographer who makes certain choices, et cetera. We can go into that. But where AI gets into that is, of course, now we have a new machine making work, and some people want to say, well, it's just the same thing as pushing a button on a camera. Well, anybody who knows anything about photography knows that it's not just about pushing buttons on cameras. It's about a lot more. So one of the challenges addressed where that relate back to that case is, you mentioned it a moment ago, Ray, is that the Copyright Office is grappling with, which is, where does authorship begin? Yeah. Let's say I use AI as a tool, not just to push a button and say, okay, make me a picture, but the AI and I kind of collaborate. And so the question is, is the machine the author, in which case there is no authorship under the law?
Right.
Or am I the author of that work because I've collaborated with this machine?
Michelle, thanks for the call. Well, here's a question. If you're at the controls of the AI, for better or worse, and you lead it in a direction, are you not then having some, in other words, I was messing around with ChatGPT early on, and I said, all right, write me a song about traffic patterns in the style of Bob Dylan. Now, it was terrible, but if I took those lyrics and put it to music, who's to say? I mean, who is to say?
Right. So as a matter of doctrine, right, if, let's say, you just said, took lyrics and put it to music. If you didn't write any of those lyrics, but then you put it to music that you wrote, arguably, you would own the copyright and the melody.
Yeah.
You would not technically own the copyright in the lyrics, because you didn't. Nobody would under the current doctrine. But if you represented to the Copyright Office that you wrote this and didn't tell them, which is one of the big problems that's coming up right now, you could lie about it.
And how would they know?
The Copyright Office wouldn't necessarily know currently. They're dealing with whether or not they should ask and how to ask. But they wouldn't necessarily know. The question would come up, what is the purpose of you registering that work, which is to potentially sue, or if somebody infringes it? If it became known under discovery that you didn't write that work.
I see.
That's where the rub comes, because your copyright would be challenged if you had a reputation for using this type of thing.
But if no one knows the first time, well, how do you get a reputation for
So maybe you skate. Maybe you get by. But the reality is they're also developing programs now that can discern, or at least arguably discern, if artificial intelligence was used.
Okay, well, I think that's a bad precedent, because popular music being what it is, there aren't that many patterns. So how can you say, all right, well, you're just a terribly derivative writer, or a machine made this?
Well, I think they're equal. No. I think, boy, how can we discern that? I don't know.
Well, David Newhart.
Well, there's so many of these things that you can't discern. This is one of the problems right now. Everything's up in the air. For example, the Copyright Office will not register a copyright if there's any AI involvement.
Yeah.
Well, no, not that if there's any. If it's 100% made by AI.
So they had the seminars and they laid out some ground rules.
Right.
But basically, it's going to be very difficult to register something.
But I have a question about the Cerrone.
Yes.
Yes. Is that affected at all by the fact that the ASMP, back in the days when we were arguing about work for hire, got a special carve out for photographers, that they do not have to register their works for them to be considered registered? They got this special deal with the Copyright Office.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of any carve outs for photographers, at least not now, that exist where they don't. The only thing that's unique about photographers is they get to register up to 750
pieces.
Images.
Well, that
in a
may
single,
be how the carve out evolved,
but there's nothing as Bill said before, copyright attaches the moment your work is fixed.
Right.
However, there are certain limitations if you do not register in terms of your ability to enforce.
Right.
And those are no different for photographers.
Okay.
It's the Copyright Forum on WAMC. Polly Law is here. Bill Westwood and David Newhoff. The number to call is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Why don't we do a few emails here before we jump back to the phones? This one's from JDQ in Little Falls. While employed as a staff writer, I offered literary suggestions to a sci-fi author to aid the world building. Not sure what world building is in this case, but to aid the world building of their novel. They did not take the advice. Am I free to offer these same suggestions to other authors I am editing, or do the intellectual property rights to these suggestions belong to the publisher I was an editor for at the time? And that's from JDQ in Little Falls, New York.
Did they come from a handbook that the publisher produced? If not, I think you're good to go.
Well, plus you can't copyright ideas.
Ideas, yeah.
So,
if something was written down and written down under a contract for hire,
that's a different issue.
Then you might have a different issue. But if you're just having a conversation and presented a bunch of ideas that nobody took.
All right, here's an interesting one. AI-generated book under my name at Amazon. This is from Suzanne. Just yesterday, I was notified that a book is listed on Amazon with me as the author. It is an AI-generated compilation of my work and several other dog trainers. If you check my name at Amazon, this fraudulent title is listed right along with my legitimate books. I've filed a complaint with Amazon, as many of my fans have, but now what? How does anyone protect themselves against this?
Contact an attorney is what I would be doing.
Yeah. But that's expensive, right?
Well, not necessarily. If the work is registered.
If the work is registered, it's not expensive.
Well, I'd counter only that the issue here, and I've heard about this happening on Amazon in particular, it's no different than other counterfeits that are rampant on Amazon. But this is not really a copyright issue, because unless her book was copied in some way, her actual work, then she has a different problem, which is a reputational issue and a problem with Amazon, for sure, using her name. But it's promoting something that has nothing to do with her actual protected work.
Why would that not be a copyright issue? And just like creating a ripoff of a handbag, it would still be copyright and...
No, it would be, so ripoff of a handbag could be, but it's most likely to be a trademark issue.
Well, it sure.
But here it's only a reputational issue. I'm just using, for example, I'm using Bill Westwood's name to sell a bunch of stuff that has nothing to do with you.
But she said it was her work in the book.
It was a compilation.
Yeah. Of her forgive work. Me. I thought it was, because the AI has also been generating works that have nothing to do with the author.
No, not really.
It's an AI-generated compilation.
Yeah.
She probably has both.
I would be talking to a good copyright attorney.
Depends on what's in it. Okay. Yeah.
And hopefully that work is registered.
Yes, and check your registration.
So this is why copyright attorneys get to go to Paris. Now I understand.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. One more email for now, and then we'll go back to the phones. David Newhoff is here, Polly Law at Bill Westwood. This is from Oliver. When a generative AI computer scrapes a song without permission, does a copy of the song thereafter reside in the AI, thus potentially automatically violating any copies can't be made provisions?
Well, you're looking at me. So.
Listen, I'm not going
to
answer
this. I would say possibly. I don't know the exact answer to that.
So the developers naturally will tell you no copy exists in there. At least many of them. I know plenty of people on the pro-copyright side who say it's not physically possible just because of the way computers work, that a fleeting copy at least will be made in RAM, which is enough to implicate the reproduction right.
There's a bit in the cloud somewhere.
Well, and then there's also the problem. We've seen people have shown that they go into AIs and they say, make me Spider-Man or whatever. And then, lo and behold, Spider-Man comes out. So obviously the elements are there to make an infringing copy. So we shall see.
Well, look, the cat's out of the bag here, right? So artists are wringing their hands, but something, it's not going to go away, right?
No, it's not.
No.
Like they said in Jurassic Park 2, at first it's all ooh and ah, and pretty soon it's all running and screaming.
The only thing that will really solve this is an X2 flare from the sun and some electromagnetic pulse.
Yeah, well, that would solve a lot of problems on the Earth.
We'd be playing with sticks and stones, and I wouldn't have a job anymore. So let's go to Lynn in Athens. Lynn, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
My question has to do with the fact that I just discovered that my great-grandfather was a low-grade famous aviator in his day, and he wrote a book, which was in 1921. And I'm interested to know, the book, it was copyrighted then, but
when
I don't know what that's worth at this point.
Go ahead, Paul.
1921.
Thank you.
Continue, Lynn.
So I wanted to know if there's any, I'm assuming it's expired. I don't even know how real copyright law was at that time. But the question is, assuming it's expired, is there any way to reactivate it? The book is currently in the public domain.
Yeah.
I've seen it. It's around. I am for sure his great-granddaughter, and I can document that. Just curious if there's any way to go there.
No, unfortunately, it's in the public domain, and it can't be extracted from the public domain.
Yeah. Okay.
You could write a book about your grandfather writing the book.
Right.
But that would...
It's pretty cool, yeah. He was the 10th ever person to fly across the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, wow. Cool. Wow. That's, yeah, neato.
Yeah,
impressed. I was very excited.
In all likelihood, that copyright has entirely expired. You could do something like, which would not, it doesn't vest any new copyright in the original work, but you could do something like have an audiobook made and you can protect the sound recording
and do a preface
itself.
Oh, interesting.
You know, and only, again, only the sound recording would be protected, not the underlying literary work.
All right, let's take a break right now. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Yes, it's the Copyright Forum. David Newhoff, Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and you. We'll be back. Yeah, Peeling Taters is the name of that. Some people will be doing that today, I imagine. That's Junior Brown. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Copyright Forum today. Bill Westwood is here. Polly Law is here. Paul Rapp not here. He's having fun. David Newhoff is here, and they're here
I'm
to answer
having
you.
Fun.
Are you having fun so far? Well, once you talk
just
to Michelle
wait.
And she complains about her not getting enough time, I think that you might have some trouble there. But it is my fault. So there you go. I hit the dump button, and that does happen. All right. So let's go now to Rob in Postenkill. Rob, you're on.
Hi, folks. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Back in seventh grade, about 50 years ago, I wrote a poem as a seventh grade final project, and we all had to, every student had to write the poem and submit it to one of five or six publishers. And the teacher said that if you get published, you will be given an A for the class. I got published. I'm not sure if that publication is copyrighted or not, but fast forward 50 years to current day, and I have an ex-wife that would like to use that three-line poem as like an inspirational thing for a craft business that she has. And I'd like to know how I would go about copywriting that, and also if the original publication that it was published in is copyrighted, if I have waived all my rights to that.
Well, this raises a bunch of issues. Number one, you were a minor when that was submitted, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Was there any kind of contract that was sent to your teacher, who I assume would be the one who would sign it? I mean...
I don't believe so, no. And I would have no way of finding that out.
You retain the copyright. No?
No, I don't think so. A, it was pre... 1976 or 1978.
Yes.
And therefore... Even if the work hadn't been published, it would have, because there was no copyright notice on it, it would have fallen into the public domain, and it would have had to have been registered back then in order to protect it. My guess is that whoever the publisher was, do you know who the publisher was?
I would have to dig that. I guarantee somewhere in my basement is that little... is that little
well,
book of
if,
poems.
If you could find that, you might contact the publisher, if they're still in existence, and just, I guess if it's in the public domain, though, what year was it?
I would have to say 1972 or 73.
Okay, you just missed the 78. I would see if the publisher's not in existence. You know, I don't see why you couldn't.
It's an orphan work.
It's an orphan work. It's in public domain, so you could probably use it.
Well, use it most likely, but it's even possible that, prior to 76, you can't really re-register to this point.
Right.
Did you get the A?
You know what? I did not. She gave me a
then,
C.
Okay. Then you also have a breach of contract.
Wow, that's
that's funny. Go back and get your transcript adjusted.
I went back to talk to her about it, and she said, I just kind of assumed. She said, the grades are already in, and I kind of assumed that I'd be getting an A because if this was such a great work that it got published, surely she recognized it. And then I got my report card a couple weeks later, and there was a C.
Well, the show's off the rails. Rob, thank you very much. Appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the copyright forum, allegedly. Let's go to Albany. Mike, you're on.
Yeah, hi, everybody. Question regarding photography and copywriting. 40 years ago or so, I used to shoot a lot of rock concerts. Other than selling individual pictures back then, none of those pictures have been circulated in any sort of digital form. Mm-hmm. And I was curious as to if I were to copyright my images, given that these are rock stars that mostly are retired, but a lot of them are still active, going back 40 years, would there be superseding copyrights, in terms of the artists having copyrights over their images that I would have to deal with in copywriting my photographs?
No. So the subjects of photographs do not own copyrights in those photographs. You do. So the photographer is the only rights holder in the image, not the subject.
But there might be a rights of privacy issue.
Unlikely.
At a concert?
Well, these are mostly live in concert shots. So I wasn't invading any privacy. Yeah. And many of them were mugging for the cameras. And on occasions when I bumped into people, I would ask them before taking their picture, and they would agree to it. So none of these would be paparazzi photos of any sort.
And even then, you could take street photographs of people, and those are still protectable.
Right.
Subjects do not own copyright rights in the images. If these images have never been anywhere, they've never been published at all, they're just part of your private collection to this date, you can register those.
All right. Mike, thank you very much for the call. This email from Ken. If I am hired under a work for hire and I do a drawing and I copyright it before I turn it in, who owns it?
The employer.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. If you sign a work for hire agreement or you're working under a work for hire agreement or an employee, you don't own the rights to anything you create.
Is employment an implicit work for hire?
Yes. Yeah. Unless there's some other contractual agreement to the contrary.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines here. It's the Copyright Forum with Polly Law, David Newhoff, and Bill Westwood. And let's go to Voorheesville. Mike, you're on. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Ray and everybody.
Hi.
Great show.
Thank you.
Got a question about, let me see. If I'm a woodworker and there are a number of magazines that I subscribe to that have step-by-step plans and drawings and stuff, is it a violation of copyright if you make that object and then offer it for sale?
The only thing that's copyrighted is the plan itself, the schematic. I think you're in the clear. You might want to go back and look at the magazine and see if there's any language to the contrary anywhere in there in the magazine.
I don't see why that would be an issue.
Yeah.
Again,
These are designs in the magazine that you're wanting to make into woodwork?
Right. Well, they are woodworking designs.
They're plans.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, most
instructions by the author.
Okay. So they're actually being presented for you to make,
but
into
not necessarily
work.
Sell.
Okay. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
If you make, let's just put it this way, if there is an underlying copyrightable work like a design, and you make that into, say, a sculptural work, then you're, then what you've made is a derivative of the underlying work, and there could be a copyright implication. But it sounds like you're describing designs that are made available for you to...
Yeah, the whole purpose, that's the whole purpose of the of putting it in the magazine, is to allow people to...
To make it, but to sell it, Bill?
Sure.
That doesn't matter.
Sure. Really?
Yeah, yeah, the sale doesn't matter.
No.
All right, Mike, there you go.
And
go ahead, man.
And how far would you have to change a design to make it not a derivative work?
Yeah, I don't think you'd have
so
to change...
In other words, the plan shows 10 dovetails on the side of a... chest, and you do it with eight.
No,
is that a change?
No, I don't think you have to change it at all.
Yeah,
honestly,
you're good.
Right. Also, if this is if this is furniture, that's not necessarily copyrightable in the first place. Those are useful.
It's a useful article. Yeah.
All right, Mike. Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Donna is in Albany. Hello there, Donna.
Hi. Very interesting. Very complicated. Back to the. Pictures, the photographs thing. I do photographs, and for the last 10 years, like everybody else who's my age, you know, I've been putting a lot of photos on Facebook. And my question is, what recourse do I have if someone used my uncopyrighted Facebook pictures for commercial production? So too late, lady?
No. I was about to say you're in trouble here. On the other hand, your work is copyrighted when you create it. If somebody's using it for a commercial purpose, that becomes a more significant issue. I would register the work today, go to the copyright.gov, register it, then find a good attorney, a copyright attorney, and discuss this, because they, you know, using your work for commercial purposes gets the user in trouble.
But what if the person who's using it copyrighted it before Donna gets to it?
It's invalid
copyright.
But don't you have to litigate that?
Well,
it's one word against another
until the proof is there. More billable hours for
I don't know that you would that would be worked out pre litigation by a good copyright attorney.
Donna, you want to follow up?
Go get him, Donna.
No, but I will. I will call Paul Rapp. You can bet I will.
Oh,
okay, thank you very
much. Now, to be clear, not an infomercial for Paul Rapp. There are a lot of copyright attorneys out there. I want to put that out there. Our legal department would want me to tell you that.
Polly or I could recommend copyright attorneys, many different ones.
Exactly. All right, let's go to Tom. And besides, Paul's not even here, so you can say whatever you want about him.
Right.
He's in Paris. Tom and Byrne, you're on. Go ahead. Yes, it's a little fuzzy. Tom, you're coming in not well. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you.
I wrote a bunch of poems. For every poem, I pulled down from the internet a photograph and included it with the determine the photographer's name. I included that with the photograph. If I give this booklet of poems away for free, is that okay?
If you give it away
question,
for free. Okay.
If I try to sell this book of poems, is that a problem?
Oh, yeah.
Both are problems.
Yeah. Either way, it's an infringement.
Yeah. Both are problems.
Yeah. Don't even if you copy somebody else's work and make it available in some way, that even if you charge nothing for it, even if you're raising money to save baby seals, it doesn't matter. It's still an infringement of that work.
And just giving them credit? It's lovely,
it doesn't
change the legal status any.
Yeah, you violated a law, and you have to be careful.
Better to ask permission than forgiveness in this case.
Okay. Tom, you want to follow up?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Zach, the engineer, giving me the evil eye. Zach, I was not on speakerphone. No? It's okay. It's on me. It's my fault. Okay. No, it's not my fault. Oh, that's good. Well, happy Thanksgiving. I like that. Kumbaya. Matthew in Woodstock. Matthew, you're on.
Okay, so this question is my dad telling me the truth or not?
Okay.
And it's about the intermittent windshield wiper. He always told me this story that some guy invented the intermittent windshield wiper, so, you know, where it goes, it's not just slow, medium, and fast, but it's and that he brought it to Ford, one of these big motor companies. They looked at it and said, this is a good idea. Let us look at it a little bit. And then they said, no, thank you. What they ended up doing is they tweaked a little bit of his design and basically ripped him off. And he has been suing these big motor companies for years. He died, and now his family is still in lawsuit trying to collect for the intermittent windshield wiper.
Bill is nodding.
Is this a true story?
Bill is nodding his head.
It's a true story. I don't know about the family still suing, but yes, basically that's a true story.
But that's patent.
But that is a patent issue and not a copyright issue. But it's obviously intellectual property still. But broadly speaking, that's a true story.
There you go.
I've never heard
broadly
of speaking.
Well, your father's right, Matthew. That's the bottom line.
Broadly speaking, is I just don't remember every single detail about it. But yes, it's pretty much a true story.
Happy Thanksgiving, Matthew. Never doubt your father again. Mike and Cahoes, you're on.
All right. Hey, Ray. How you doing? So I'm a school teacher, and if I make a worksheet or a video for my class, do I own that, or does the school own that?
I think the school probably owns that. I would probably want to hear from an attorney for sure, because I don't know anything about school and teacher contracts. But generally speaking, if you're working for an organization as an employee, the company, or in this case the school, I believe would technically own the copyrights to whatever you created. That said, I don't think that schools maybe look at copyright the same way that big companies do. So you might go to the school and just ask and see if they would consider a carve out for you.
But I have a question. If the worksheet is based on a specific textbook,
different issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it depends.
Let's say that I created from my own mind, so I'm not using a textbook.
Then I would go to the school. I would get somebody in a knowledgeable position to find out exactly, are you under work for hire, which I suspect you are. If you are, I would ask if they would consider allowing you to publish this and giving you written permission to do so. Anything can be done contractually, even with an employer-employee work-for-hire situation.
And I would only add that since you mentioned worksheet, is the work you've done protectable under copyright?
Well, that's a separate.
Sufficiently original.
Yeah, that's all separate. Yeah.
We had a similar question here from Michelle and Ware, who taught science for 27 years, wrote most of her own curricula, including hands-on labs. And again, the question is, do they belong to her or the school district?
Out of an abundance of caution, I would ask, as Polly said, better to ask than to get sued. I would ask. I would try to find out. Because, again, if the school doesn't have any interest in commercializing that, then the odds are at least reasonable that they would give you an okay if it's work for hire.
But how can you copyright something that is, in other words, Euclid and the stuff he came up with, teachers are using that. You can't copyright that. Right?
I'm not following you.
In other words,
you could copyright the way that you phrase the setup for the question, but only that specific wording if it is not too generic.
See, now we're back to the AI, because that's what people are doing. They're taking all the textbooks they read when they were in school, and they're spitting it out in their own curricula.
Not really. I think by the time they get to the point where they could spit something out in their own curricula, they have evolved and developed much more knowledge.
Define evolve. We have 12 seconds. Now I have you.
Survival of the fittest, Ray.
Okay, so we're about done here. Hey, David Newhoff, thanks for coming, man.
Thank you very much for having me.
What's your website?
Illusionofmore.com.
All right. Bill Westwood, as always, thank you. What's your website?
Westwoodmedical.com.
and Polly Law.
I'm on Instagram at artwordstea, tea like the tea you drink.
All right, fair enough. Well, thank you all for being here. Support comes from Hudson Beach Glass, a gallery for contemporary functional and sculptural glass and artisan jewelry, plus buy appointment opportunities for hands-on glass blowing experiences. HudsonBeachGlass.com for details. At the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Thanks again to Bill, Polly, and David for being here. Thank you for listening. Tremendous calls and emails. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Happy Thanksgiving, Zach. Thanks to Andrea Leon. Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving. Thanks to me. I'm Ray Graff, and happy Thanksgiving. Thank you all very much. All right, so no Vox Pop tomorrow or Friday. Have a lovely turkey day. We'll see you next week.